Okay. All right, so we do this thing where we crack our drinks to the mic. This is how Doug syncs everything up. Three. Three, two, one. Cheers.
Cheers.
Okay, we're back in the studio, everyone. Last time you saw us, we were in Mexico. That was a very, very chaotic, interesting episode, to say the least. But this week, we have a very special guest, Anthony Smith. Welcome to the Dead Sailor Podcast.
Thank you. Stoked to be here.
Yeah. No, I'm going to start off by saying I'm excited about this episode, mainly because, and I'm not trying to just, you know, I don't know, pet, I don't know, what's the proper terminology? I'm not trying to stoke your ego, but
okay.
you're one of my favorite photographers.
Thank you.
This is going to be a good time to
appreciate talk about
all things content creation and photography. And
yeah.
Yeah. So maybe introduce yourself and let the listeners and viewers know who you are.
I'm Anthony Smith. You might recognize my name from the masthead of Bike Magazine. I worked there for like just about 10 years. And then helped co-found the very short-lived print magazine called Beta MTB. But throughout that whole time, I've been a photographer as well. So, kind of been on both sides of it, like helping to curate content with photographers from all over the world that I love. And then also had an opportunity to work alongside them and then, you know, be the photographer on certain projects, you know, so it's been kind of a fun trajectory. I've been doing a lot of different things with photo stuff over the years, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We'll get into Bike Mag and Beta, a little bit, but first things first, I want to know more about where are you from? You're from Canada. I know that, but
true.
You know, where did you grow up and, kind of where did it all start for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, grew up all over Western Canada, to be honest. Like, when I was really young, we lived in Calgary and then, lived a few different places throughout Alberta, lived in Saskatchewan, in Manitoba, and then also in BC, lived on Vancouver Island for a little bit, but didn't actually start mountain biking until we moved back from Vancouver Island to Calgary when I was about 13.
What brought you all over Canada like that?
My dad, he just kind of, you know, he was doing real estate in Calgary, in the late 70s, early 80s. And then there was a big kind of similar to now, a big recession in Canada. And just saw that as an opportunity to try a bunch of different stuff. So, was a farmer for a little bit. We lived on a farm. And, that's when I was a really little kid. And then, when we lived on the West Coast, when we lived on Vancouver Island, he was selling fishing boats. And that was super interesting as well. And then kind of back into real estate type stuff when we moved back to Calgary. And that was, like I said, when I was 13. And I don't know if I'm like mixing up this story or kind of like wishing that this was the story, but I'm pretty sure I got my first mountain bike magazine on the ferry trip from leaving Vancouver Island to Calgary and like at the ferry, you know, gift shop or whatever it was. I'm pretty sure that's where I got my first mountain bike magazine. And I don't.
So you were leaving Vancouver Island to get on a ferry.
With a promise of being gifted this hand-me-down bike from my dad's friend. And so I think that's why we got.
So that inspired you to see this magazine and be like, oh.
Yeah,
and I'm going to get this bike. So,
and I think it was like pre-bike magazine. I want to say it was Mountain Bike Action because it looked basically just like a giant catalog. Yeah. So,
do you know what year this is?
Well, yeah, that would have been 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so hopefully I'm not mixing that up, but yeah.
Nobody will know any different other than maybe the people involved.
Yeah, also in the process, I'm dating myself by telling this story. So, okay, there we go. Got to Calgary, got this hand-me-down bike, and then that was it. You know, it was fully rigid, like really, truly POS, you know. Mm-hmm. It had bio-pace on it, like friction shifting, you know. Mm-hmm. And but it was enough to just kind of like light the fire. Like, learning how to ride and kind of like local trails in Calgary and stuff. And then eventually saved up for like a real bike, Norco Sasquatch, and had front suspension and all that kind of stuff. And then, yeah, that was it. It's kind of like been bikes from that point forward.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy.
So, you know, this is 13 years old or so, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Did you get into photography before you discovered bikes, or were you into photography or play with cameras before bikes at all?
You know? No, like kind of way after, actually. You know, my dad always had cameras laying around the house. He was super into it before I was born and when we were growing up. So he had all sorts of different film cameras, but he also had all sorts of different film, like video cameras as well. So we just kind of had all this stuff, and I was always just really enamored with it. Just like seemed cool and mechanical, and, you know, kind of wanted to play with them because they seemed like such cool, precious objects. Not even really like making the connection of what you could do with them. And it wasn't until I was quite a bit older, like after high school, actually, he gave me a camera, a Pentax K1000, that I was able to kind of like learn on and take around with me and shooting a bunch of black and white film and kind of getting really curious about stuff. And ended up, you know, this is like pre-YouTube, kind of more or less like pre-internet, like late 90s, yeah. You know? And ended up taking some night classes at the local community college, and some, you know, professional photographer, can't verify how professional he was, sure, you know, looking sure. back, but, you know, every week for like 5 or 6 weeks, we kind of went in and we had like little assignments. Okay, so you're going to go and you're going to do like long exposure shots this week. And then we come in and we have our slides and we take our 3 slides and we put them in the slide projector and show them on the wall and kind of give us a little critique and stuff. And yeah, it was like, you just kind of like learn these little basic tricks. And then I was like, oh my God, this is pretty amazing. And that was kind of the impetus to like decide, okay, maybe I want to, you know, take this a step further and go to art school, you know?
Yeah. So subject matter during this time, was it bikes?
No, not at all. Because photography was hard back then, you know, like, it's not like it is today. It's not like you have this constant stream of inspiration on your phone or YouTube to learn it or whatever.
Or instant gratification of a digital camera where you shoot a photo, you can see the mistake you made and correct it instantly.
Totally.
And then do it again. Yeah, you didn't have that back then.
Yeah, or money. So, yeah, so you've got this roll of like 36 shots and you're like, oh my God, this is like, each time I press this, it's like, it's costing me a little bit of cash,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so it's just this like really careful, well thought out learning process. And all the results I'd get back were honestly like pretty shitty, but just good enough to kind of like keep you like, okay, well, yeah, I can fix this or I can fix that. And it was honestly just like landscape stuff, architecture, you know, just shooting in the city or whatever, you know, like nothing kind of action sports related. For a long, long time.
So where were you getting most of your inspiration for that style of photography or that subject matter at that time? Were you into architecture? Were you looking at architecture magazines or, you know, how were you sort of what were you mimicking? You know, cause I mean, that's a lot of us, you know, we, you know, as artists, we kind of bite other artists' styles. And so I'm just curious, you know, what were you inspired by at that time?
You know, honestly, I still probably was inspired by a lot of the stuff I was seeing in like skate magazines, snowboard magazines, and mountain bike magazines. For sure, I was inspired by that, but that maybe it's just me being like slow learner or whatever, but that just seemed like so far off. Like if I'm just taking a photo of a static object and struggling to get what I think I'm going to get in my head, like how the hell am I going to take a photo of someone riding a bike or snowboarding mm-hmm. or whatever, you know? And so, yeah, those were inspirations for sure. But I think I was just looking at everything. And you know, my dad, having been super into photography and stuff, we had a lot of photo books around the house and things like that. So there was a lot of stuff I could look at around the house for inspiration. But yeah, I don't even know what I was trying to emulate. I knew I just liked it.
Yeah.
And I liked the process of getting the film back and getting the photos back and... And there's something that just kind of kept me wanting to do more. I wouldn't say it was really until I started getting, you know, into art school and being around my peers and seeing kind of what they were creating, and then just having maybe like a deeper understanding of what the whole landscape of the art world, the photo world was, and just kind of discovering all these different places where I could get inspiration. You know, mm-hmm. It seems so much different than it is today, where you have all that inspiration like at your fingertips. I mean, it's absolutely so easy to find that. And I think the learning curve is so short for people getting into it now, you know?
And so to go back to kind of like, you know, you discovering photography and whatnot, and, you know, did you start shooting? How old were you? Because you said you discovered, you know, you kind of got your first bike at 13, and then it was way after that you started shooting photography. At what point did you start picking up a camera?
Yeah, I'd say like, I want to say it was probably like when I was 19,
okay,
18 or 19, mm-hmm. And that's when I had a camera and I could kind of like go out and experiment, and I kind of had the interest to kind of see what I could do with it. Yeah, I don't know why I wasn't kind of pursuing that before that, because we certainly were like dad camming it, me and my buddies, with like our BMX mm-hmm. bikes, our mountain bikes. Mm-hmm. Like, we kind of had that inspiration to kind of create stuff that we'd see like in the mountain bike world or snow mm-hmm. world or whatever. But for whatever reason, I never kind of like melded the two or had that inspiration when I was like, you know, 15 or 16 to be like, hey, dad, can I take your camera? You know, maybe I was intimidated by it.
Yeah,
because it did seem like a really intimidating process back then, just with film and everything, you know?
So at this point, you're pretty deep into action sports world at 19 years old. And when you're picking up a camera, you know, you're an avid mountain biker. Are you riding, are you skateboarding, snowboard? Like what, you know, I'm just trying to get a landscape of what you were into. And it's just, I find it kind of interesting that, you know, this is obviously about you, but when I started shooting photos and video, it was purely from the inspiration of BMX and skate culture. And I was like, just that was my subject matter.
Yeah.
So I find it kind of interesting that you are into these activities, but then you're, you know, shooting more landscape and architectural photography when you first start, you know?
Yeah, that's maybe even overselling it. Architectural photography. I was just taking photos like in the city of buildings and stuff. Yeah. You know? Like, I don't know if it was like, that makes it sound like I had a plan or something. But, you know? Yeah, but I don't know. It is interesting thinking back, because that was kind of like the world I lived in, as like a rider, you know, mm-hmm. riding bikes and snowboarding. Those are kind of two things I did. You know, you have two seasons mm-hmm. up there. It's like summer for a little bit and then winter for a long time, it seems like. Yeah, and who knows why I didn't really get into that. And even when I went to art school, I didn't really, throughout that whole time, I never really had much of an interest or what I was doing. I didn't kind of meld those two things. I didn't mm-hmm. kind of bring mountain biking into it or snowboarding into it. And, you know, I'm fast forwarding a little bit, but it wasn't until I got the internship with Bike in my senior year of college where I really, started to kind of merge those two worlds, mm-hmm. you know, but
yeah, that's it. That's super interesting. And, you know, and I think maybe your photography actually shows a lot in your photography, because your photos aren't your typical bike riding photos. You know, you there's a lot of art in the process. You can tell, you know, the bit behind the lighting, the way you frame them, you know, how you sort of like you pull out a lens. I've been on shoots with you where I'm shooting video and you're mm-hmm. shooting photography, and you pull out a lens and pick an angle that I personally am like, I don't see what Anthony's doing. But then when I see the final product,
and hopefully it works out.
I'm like, holy shit. Like, that was such a sick angle, you know? So,
oh, I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that, I think the art side of things has probably driven or created helped you create your own style of photography. If I were to maybe make a statement, for me personally, like, you know, I was always just trying to mimic other photographers. And so I don't have as much creativity. It's, which is like, I recognize that in my videography and my photography. I'm like, it's kind of very, you know, three quarter, you know, subject matter in the, you know, like one third or whatever. And, But, you know, I think, like, I don't really think, like, oh, I'm going to shoot this rider through a raindrop, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, when you're you I've witnessed you do that.
You know? Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, I know a lot of people will say or probably think, like, well, you don't need to go to art school to be a photographer. And I absolutely, you don't need to. And you didn't need to back then. Even, you know, there's certainly ways you could learn the business and the skill set you needed, like even in the film days. But what you don't get through teaching yourself or learning it all on YouTube these days is you don't get that like interaction and critiques and those honest conversations, like with your peers and with your instructors. Like, you know, say nowadays somebody gets a camera, they get good really fast, they build up this big Insta following, and they're just in this echo chamber of people mm-hmm. telling them like, yeah, fuck, you're great. Awesome. You're awesome. And sometimes you need people there right in front of you, looking you in the eye, telling you how shitty it is, you know, and not in a mean way, like in, like really just trying to critique and break it down and strip it down to a level where you can kind of like understand what it is, what you're trying to do, what the purpose is with this one image, you know? And I think that was like, when I look back, that was super valuable. I don't think anything like that I learned technically was super necessary, but you know, those conversations I had with fellow students and teachers throughout all those years, I mean, yeah, it's invaluable.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think you can get that anywhere else.
No, it is funny. It feels like, we're also going to date ourselves a little bit, but
God, here we go.
It feels like the younger generation now can't take criticism from their like art or style or anything like that. They just go straight to defensiveness instead of being like, oh, maybe I need to kind of think or listen to what this person might be saying. And that goes for graphic artists, photographers, videographers. Doug, I tell you how shitty your products, your videos are all the time, and he just swears at me and storms out the door. No, I'm just kidding. but I do think, you know, that mentality of, oh, maybe I need to just swallow my pride and listen to what other people have to say, especially in a group setting, like in a school, you know, where you have a professor who has, you know, studied it for years. And I'm not saying everyone, they're all correct, right? We're not saying that everything they say is correct, but it just gives you a new perspective to maybe look at your product a little differently.
Right? I totally agree. And I think that's a good point too. It's like, it doesn't really matter if they're right or wrong. You know, what I could say is that whether I agreed with the teacher or the student or whoever that was making a criticism, I mean, it was coming from a place that they were really trying to break it down and make a point, and didn't mean I needed to agree with them, you know? And it's tough here too. Like, even if people are getting criticized online or whatever, I mean, it's usually not the most articulate criticism. I mean, it's like troll culture. Yeah. So you can't get that like super engaged, in-depth criticism, you know? So yeah, I don't know. It's something that I'm glad I had, but if a young photographer came to me and said, oh, well, do you think I need to go to photo school? And shit, I don't know if you actually do.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, like in this day and age, like,
it's, I mean, I don't know. It what's interesting is you're recognizing the value in it. You're advocating the value and what you took away from it, which is, that's legit. I mean, what you've taken away is something that you're probably not going to get outside of school, which is sad, you know, unless you put yourself into a position to be able to, I don't know, like maybe you have a gallery and you're like, tell everyone, hey, give me your unsolicited, like legit criticism. Don't troll me, but like, tell me what you think. Or even, I guess, you know, you could do that on social media too. I don't know. You might be able to.
True. What's the reaction you're going to get? Who knows, right?
Yeah. No, but it is really interesting. So back to that style. So one thing I've recognized, so you learned on film camera.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I've noticed in your digital photography is you definitely lean towards sort of keeping that sort of like gritty film vibe to the look of your pictures.
Yeah.
Is that intentional because it's just what you like and what you love, or like what inspires that sort of feel
to you? Yeah, I mean, it's that nostalgic memory. It's like going back to the photos I'd look at in bike and kind of wondering what that magic was. And then I go and intern there, and they're like both Dave Reddick and Morgan Meredith, you know, the two, the photo editor and assistant photo editor at the time, they're like, yeah, we just shoot Kodak 100 VS, push it two stops. And it, you shoot a couple rolls like that, and you just see this like certain like look and feel and grittiness and graininess. And you kind of hear of other photographers that kind of have similar processes, whether they're shooting on that film stock or a different one, or they have a particular way that they're going to push or pull the film. I don't know. It's like this artistic decision that they're making prior to shooting. Mm-hmm. And obviously you don't really do that as much with digital, but you can kind of have this idea that, okay, this is how I think this photo is going to look. Like I find myself doing that, you know, when I'm shooting, I'll be like, oh, I think this is going to look really good as like a whatever style of processing, whether it's a black and white or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. You can kind of like envision it. So maybe mentally you're trying to make those artistic decisions before you press the shutter and not just kind of wing it. Mm-hmm. As much, but yeah. I certainly do wing it a lot. But,
you know. Do you still shoot film ever?
Yeah. Yeah. Lots.
Yeah. And is, yeah, that, are you shooting bike projects? Cause like, we'll get into some of the people that you've worked and some of the projects you've worked with, but you know, are you like, I feel like I would love for you to do a Tenet project where you're shooting film. But it's risky, right? Because, I mean, you don't, like, how do you know if you're coming away with something? Me, personally, yeah. I think I appreciate the photos even more, right? Like the film photos I appreciate more because of the fact, like, it could be a less superior photo than a digital photo because you didn't get 100 cracks at shooting, like, getting it just right. But the fact that you shot it on film, took it into a dark room, and tweaked it and played with it, and then you get the final product. I feel like that's almost special in its own way, right?
Well, I should preface that. I do shoot a lot of film, and I never really shoot mountain biking with it. It's more of just like if I'm on a vacation with my wife, or I guess with a family now that I have a daughter, you know, I bring my film camera a lot with me, and it's more just like those personal moments, kind of just like almost like tourist moments, you know? Mm-hmm. Like if you're on my website, I have a, you know, just travel section. It's more just like personal shots, and pretty much everything there is film, you know? And it's pretty rare, even though I bring my film cameras with me a lot on shoots, it's pretty rare that I actually like take any frames. Every now and then, like set someone up for a nice portrait with a medium format camera or something like that. But it's actually pretty rare because like you said, you just don't know if it's going to turn out. There's a lot of variables with film, and then you could be like, well, I can make it look pretty close to film in post know that I'm going to get it right now.
Right.
And I do mess up more often than I'd like to admit. So, sometimes it's nice to know you messed up right there and then.
Yeah. So, kind of back to the film thing, I had a question about too is, you know, you took a lot of inspiration right out of the gate from, interning at Bike Mag. So those guys were shooting film back then, which is awesome that they're creating, you know, a magazine via like film is just amazing. And BMX culture obviously was very much the same. Skate culture was the same around that era as well. You know, Ricky Adam was my favorite. I don't know if you ever heard of
course,
him.
Yeah,
he was my favorite photographer growing up just because he was like super gritty, wide angle lens, punk shows, you know, and then just the most raw city, like UK city street shots and things like that. And I actually have a funny story about meeting him one time. He was flown in for Scott Town, who was he used to be the, I think he was the editor of BMX Action back in the day, or he worked for BMX Action a bunch of years ago, worked with Spike Jones and stuff. And he's actually I would love to have him on this podcast. I'm kind of rambling at this point right now, but anyways, it was his 40th birthday. I think it was his 40th birthday. I hope it is. I hope it was. there was like a huge party at our skate park in Kalamazoo, and, they flew Ricky Adam there. I had no idea that Ricky Adam was at this. And there was this dude shooting film with, you know, he's holding the film camera, fisheye lens, with a hand holding a flash, standing on a coping to coping spine.
So I can almost like envision the photos he's taking just by that, like that. That's such a classic stance, you know, from that era of BMX.
He's like standing on the spine, holding the camera and holding the flash up, and people are like boosting and doing threes and stuff over the spine. He's shooting all these photos. And I shot the shit with the dude, not knowing who he was.
Oh, no way.
And then the magazine comes out. The issue of Dig that he was shooting for came out, and there was all those photos, and it says photo credit, Ricky Adam.
And you're like, damn it.
Fuck, I can't believe I met that dude. I was like, he's like my favorite photographer. So I wrote him. I found it. I went to his website and got his email address, and I wrote him. I was like, dude, we chatted at Scott Towns' birthday party in Kalamazoo. I wish I would have realized who you were. You were my favorite photographer.
Yeah.
And he was just so nice. He wrote me back, and he was just like, he's like, oh man, if you ever have any questions or if you ever make it out this way or whatever, feel free to reach out to me. I'd love to like meet up with you or something like that. But it was just such a cool era, you know, like these dudes shooting film and creating a magazine that just felt so raw. Like Dig was a raw magazine.
Totally.
Bike Mag back then was a raw magazine, you know?
Yeah. And it was such a different flow of, how the photos came in and where they stayed. And, you know, people would send in submissions on film, you know, you get a binder full of slides and, you know, over the light table, the photo editors would go through and kind of pick out slides. And then that slide was there at Bike Mag till it ran. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, it wasn't like you're not on your phone and like, ah, so and so posted that shot. I was going to run it. It's whatever in the magazine. You know, it's like, it was just such a different time. And then consequently, like the audience, I mean, to see the banger shots, you're going into like the premium magazines, you know, to see the banger photos from whatever film project or whatever, you know, it's just had this different flow and energy that was just honestly just really inspiring. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like less is more. Mm-hmm. And now more is less, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it is really, I don't know, man. It is really kind of disheartening the way content just flows. It almost feels like running the brand, you know, running Tenet. If it just feels like sometimes like you're just like in this rat race and flow of just he's like, oh, I gotta get something out. I gotta get something out. And then I feel like the quality of the content dives because you're not taking the time to really create something unique and special. And so, you're just trying to get it out there as fast as you can. And
I agree, know, man,
it's a real bummer. And what's crazy too, is like, you know, I guess since we're on the subject of Bike Mag, let's get into the kind of that. So you intern there, how did you work your way up to being the photo editor there? Like tell us your trajectory within Bike Mag.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, in the magazine at the time, they had, hey, we're looking for interns. Here's a, you know, email address. They had it in the letters section, I think it was. So I ended up just sending an email to this random email address, like, hey, I'm Anthony, I'm a photo student, blah, blah, blah. Didn't hear anything. I think I sent that in, you know, December or January, and then whole spring, summer goes by, and then like 2 weeks before my senior year started, I got a call from Morgan Meredith, who was the assistant photo editor at the time, just asking if I'd be interested, and you know, asked my teachers at school, and they were like, no, I don't think you should do that. It's your senior year. You know, you have to work on your senior project, and asked my parents, and my mom was like, I don't think it's a good idea. You should stay around and, you know, get through your senior year. And then my dad was like, yeah, go for it. You know, and that's, he always kind of had that adventurous spirit that, as you know, demonstrated by us moving all over the country when we were young. But yeah, obviously didn't listen to my teachers or my mom at the time. I just was like, yeah, no, I'm doing it. And I just kind of had this sense that it was just such, I didn't really know much about what I'd be doing or what it was. And, it just seemed like too good of an opportunity to pass up. You know, and it's like, yeah, I went down there in September, and then at 3 months, like in just what felt like the epicenter of action sports, we were in the old Surfer magazine building with surfer, skateboarder, snowboarder magazine, bike and powder. And yeah, it was just such a, amazing energy down there, you know, with just all the people on staff for all those different magazines and all the people kind of cruising through the building, you know, being in Southern California for some of those titles. I mean, there's athletes cruising through all the time. And it just felt this energy of like, you're in the spot. And, yeah. And then obviously to just kind of it was kind of at the tail end of the film days. So, you know, I'd say maybe 75% of the photographers were still shooting on film and sending in film slide submissions. And so you just had this tactile experience of like looking at these slides and just seeing them, you know, like perfectly composed. And it's like, that's how it came out of the camera, you know, mm-hmm. like perfectly exposed and composed. And, it was just incredibly inspiring.
So when photographers would send in their film like that, did you guys have a dark room in Bike to develop it, or did you do that outside?
No, they did all that themselves, you know, and most of the photographers were shooting on slide film. So they'd send in their slides, and then you just have all the slides on the light table, just there in the photo department. And, yeah, just looking over the light table, it's all lit up, and you're just like with the loop, just looking, mm-hmm. looking over the slides, just kind of in awe, you know, like I mentioned, I'm still kind of in my own personal work, just kind of taking photos of just random shit, in the city or whatever. Or at the time when I was in California, it was just a new place. So just kind of like documenting the place, not really shooting any kind of like, any action at all.
Yeah. Know? What was your role when you, as an intern there?
Just kind of the busy work, you know, a submission would come in, I'd kind of catalog it all, get it all ready, get it ready for them to look at. I wasn't doing anything important, you know, mailing slides back, mm-hmm. getting slides in, sending out random magazines here and there. You know, I was just like a gopher, do whatever, you know. Just,
sure. When was the first time you got either, did you submit your own photo and be like, hey, can I get this? Hey, I shot this insane photo. Could you, like, what do you think of it? Or did they go, all right, Anthony, we're sending you out on this project?
Well, yeah, I have two stories about that. So when I was still an intern, you know, at the time there, we had like the front of book section of the magazine, and there'd be, you know, kind of these 1-2 page little stories about kind of random stuff. And there was a story about the Navy SEALs mountain bike team. And so they were going to be racing the 12 hours of Temecula, I think it was, as a team. And there was a little write up on them. And so Dave said, oh, Anthony, if you're going out, if you want to go out there, you can try and get some photos for this piece. And I was like, oh yeah, absolutely. And so went out with, 35 mil film camera in my medium format, this Bronica SQ that I used to shoot with a lot. And, just kind of went in and hung out with them, tried to shoot a few action photos, completely unsuccessful, like really, really bad. And then got with my medium format, just got this one nice shot, like classic guy, like biking the stand, running the bike through the gears or whatever it was. Nice little sun flare, shot on a slide film, handed it in. And that was like my first published photo. I don't know. I look back and I still think it looks sick because it's like a little film border on it and everything. And then like post internship, I was actually.
So when did you get brought on to like stay full time?
Not for a few years. Yeah. So that was in, I did that internship in the fall of 2007. And then, not until 2010 is when I got brought back on. And, like in between there, I was just going to say, you know, I was, testing a bike for them, or I had a bike that I was kind of going to write a review on or whatever for the web. And they asked if I could shoot some photos for it for magazine, and went out and I did. I tried to shoot my buddy riding it. I mean, really bad photos.
And I wish I could. Do you have any of these pictures? Do you still have like all the developed film?
Oh yeah. No, I'm sure I have these particular photos I'm talking about. And I sent them in, never heard anything. And then eventually talked to Dave, and he's like, oh, you know, we had to go a different direction. He had a really nice way of saying, like,
your photos suck.
Didn't make the
cut. Not like your art critiques. Yeah. He's very nice about it.
Didn't make the cut, buddy. And I was like, oh, yeah, no problem. You know, kind of sheepish. Like, I knew it was kind of bad. And I was like, oh, maybe it'll pass. And I was like, no, it would not pass. I think it was in 2009, they had the first Bible of Bike test for Bike Magazine, and that was up in Whistler. And, you know, being a former intern, and I lived in Vancouver at the time, like, you should just come up, hang out. And so it was a month long. There's a place for me to stay for the whole month and just kind of stayed up there and just kind of did whatever. I was kind of like helping test bikes, ride bikes, be in front of the camera, nothing behind the scenes, no shooting at all. Just kind of being like the intern gopher, just, you know, happy attitude and do whatever I could to help out. And then finished up that project, kind of got through the fall. And then in the springtime, I got a call from Morgan, and he said, hey, I haven't told anyone yet. I think we're going to leave. I've got a new opportunity on the horizon. And I'm wondering if you'd be interested in taking over for me. And I was like, holy shit. Like, I was just working at a bike shop at the time, same bike shop I worked at through college and stuff.
Is the position was photo editor?
Assistant photo editor.
Okay.
For not only Bike Magazine, but a road bike magazine called Paved that we did for about four and a half years, I believe it was. And then Powder Magazine as well, the ski magazine. Yeah, obviously jumped at the opportunity. That company went to bat for me and they got me a work visa to work in the States. And yeah, and that was that. Like, sold everything I had.
So prior to this, were you still living in Canada, or were you,
yeah,
you were just kind of bouncing back and forth?
No, not bouncing back and forth.
Canada only.
No, I was like an intern. My internship ended and they're like, all right. And
you went back to Calgary?
Thank you for your service.
Yeah.
No, I was living in Vancouver at the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I went to art school in Vancouver. So I went back, did that last semester of art school, graduated, and was just kind of working at the bike shop. Just, I mean, in hindsight, I don't even know what I was trying to do. Like, I wasn't really working as a photographer too much. Like, I'd have the odd job here and there, but I mean,
were you actively shooting photos during that time too?
Yeah, absolutely. Not getting paid for it.
Yeah.
Like, I was definitely shooting a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just hemorrhaging money.
Yeah.
Shooting photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely like not making a living,
yeah,
you know, working at the bike shop. And I don't know, maybe I'm just like a slow learner. It takes me a long time to kind of like figure things like that out. But then, I got that opportunity to come on full time at Bike. And then that was the opportunity where I'm like in it full time, like seeing photos come across my desk, just as the assistant at the time. And then being able to shoot quite a bit as well. I was able to shoot a lot of stuff in the studio. We had a studio photographer we'd work with as well down there, and learned a ton from him. I mean, he'd been in it for a long time, and it was just like school 2.0. Like, mm-hmm. I was just able to learn so much. And so that was 2010. And you know, just as things developed, this is kind of like the rise of social media started, mm-hmm. and the business started to change really, mm-hmm. really quickly. And it started to feel way more fast paced. When I first got there, it was easy for Dave and I to manage 6 issues of Powder, 9 issues of Bike, and I guess it was 4 issues of Paved. And as those demands from like social media primarily like got more intense, it was just impossible to manage. And so they kind of, in 2015, I believe it was, they just kind of made the call. They're like, we need to kind of like split the photo department up. We need a dedicated person for Bike. Paved had folded at this point. RIP Paved, you know. But kind of gloss over that. But we just need a dedicated person for Bike and a dedicated person for Powder. And they just decided to kind of split us up and I guess give me a big promotion. So I was steering the ship, and it was a pretty big adjustment. I mean, Dave had been the photo editor there for 20 something years at that point. I mean, as far as the photographers were concerned, I mean, he was the lifeblood of Bike. And I mean, I think a lot of the old school photographers were still consider him to be that, you know. It's just, I don't know. It's just the way media kind of changed, like a change needed to happen. And there's only one of him, and there's like needed more people, you know, to be just kind of like focused on the one thing full time. It was just how things changed. So it kind of felt like a lot of pressure getting thrust into that role and kind of working with all these photographers that I just kind of idolized, to be honest, mm-hmm. you know, my whole time through art school. And then
who are some of your favorite photographers?
Oh, I mean, yeah, like Sterl, Sven, Sterling Lawrence, Sven Martin, Stephen Wild is a photographer that shot for Bike for a number of years. Doesn't really shoot mountain biking anymore, but massive, massive inspiration, probably the biggest inspiration to me. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, name anyone and they would contribute to bike. I mean, it was like the place to have your photos seen.
I mean, the quality of the content that Bike Mag was putting out during that time, I mean, during much of its existence was the pinnacle. It was the halo of like quality content. All the photos, the articles, the writing, the layout, everything. It was just like so well put together, and you guys kept so much love for the art aspect of it, right?
Like, yep.
And you know, maybe that's a testament to, you know, your contribution and some of the other people that are there, you know, who have a passion for the art and the creative side of content, you know.
Yeah, and I think that was kind of like a vetting process. Like, I certainly wasn't the first intern or the last intern to kind of move through there. Like, there's a lot of people that could have called, I guess, when it was time for Morgan to move on. But I guess, yeah, perhaps based on you know, my art school background, or just kind of having a real appreciation for that ethos of, you know, making sure everything was super premium, from the photography to the storytelling, the writing, everything, you know, was just at a certain level. I'm sure they could recognize that. And I'm sure there was a reason to kind of like bring me into the fold and kind of give me an opportunity to grow there, which I certainly did. I mean, if I'd never had that opportunity, it's hard to say whether I'd be shooting photos seriously. Certainly, I don't know if I'd be doing it for a living. Like, I really do feel like in my case, that was what I needed to kind of be where I am today, for sure. You know?
Well, I mean, you were just surrounded by, you were just being flooded with inspiration, which I think
all
is
day
just
long.
A massive driving factor.
Yeah. Know? And I mean, I think about like how much I would actually shoot compared to like a full-time shooter during those days, like really not shoot that much, but I guess you're kind of seeing the results of everyone. You're seeing everybody's successes and failures and kind of like learning through other people, you know, like, I love this. Why do I love it? Or I don't like this. I don't think this was very successful. Like, why do I think that, you know, like really taking that approach of like really having honest critiques of the work I'm seeing and trying to think about how it's going to affect the viewer, you know, like really trying to make them feel what it was like in that moment with that photo, or, you know, how it can help move the words along to an article. You know, I think it was a real, it's not something I see emulated a lot with a lot of online media, you know, that right. care and attention to detail with the pacing and storytelling with the photography and words kind of merged together. It's kind of just like, I don't know, you feel like it's a little rushed these days, because everything
is the best photo we got from this entire thing. Here it is.
Or here's every photo we got. You know, it's kind of that. And I mean, it's kind of like less is more. Like, sometimes it's really like honing it down and paring it down to the those important moments that really like just sync up with the words so nicely and just like make a piece shine, you know?
And I think, you know, you can today, you know, jumping to present, you know, you do a lot of work, and I don't want to get too much into what you're doing just yet, but, you know, looking at your more recent projects that you're working on, you definitely are using that mentality to like all the stuff you do for SRAM. It's like very much well put together, you know, and I don't know if that's purely your creative or if there's somebody, you know, at SRAM that's driving a lot of like that sort of well-made content. But
there's such a massive team of talented people, like, of anyone I kind of work with, they seem to have that that same ethos of bike, of just a real like premium placed on the images and the storytelling and the design and the final package. Like, whenever I get a call to do a project with them, I'm so excited, because I know how my photos are going to be used and represented is just going to be like, it's going to blow me away every time, you know. It just looks so good. So I mean, those are kind of the, in this landscape where there's really not a ton of like media outlets anymore, I mean, those are the people you want to work with.
Totally.
You know, in the commercial space, you want to work with those people that really do care about storytelling and creating a culture around mountain biking. And I think them in particular, they're really doing that, you know?
Yeah. So going back to bike, you jumped into this role in 2015, essentially being, were you head of like photo at that point when they split powder and bike.
Yeah. I mean, there was just me. I mean, it went from two people doing two magazines. So one person doing one magazine.
Is this each? When Bike Mag was starting to get thinner and thinner and thinner? Cause it I don't know. At one point it just like, it felt like the magazine was getting slimmed down, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And there's a bunch of different reasons for that. And I mean, there was different times within its history where it got quite thin and things were good and they were bad and they were good and they were bad. But certainly when I took over, we were kind of in one of those, I mean, we were on the decline, whether we knew it or not. I mean, that was kind of the, you don't want to say the beginning of the end, but it was like, it was certainly on the trajectory where media was changing. Advertisers were spending money in different spots and obviously making a print magazine a business, that makes it really hard, right? So yeah, it was like little things like just changing the paper stock to a little bit shittier paper, which I don't know.
The paper stock was always like really high quality cover. And then like kind of like this like nice soft matte.
And then you're like reading one page and then reading the page behind it. At the same time, so thin.
I know.
No, it was crazy. Like, so they downgraded our paper and cover stock, and stuff started looking really thin, and the page counts were thin as well. So yeah, it was just a thin magazine. Mm-hmm. But to that paper, this is like a nerdy print thing, I guess. Like we'd run color proofs on every photo, so we'd send it out to the color guy, print it, and we'd get them back, and we'd do all the color corrections and stuff, and then those files that we've color corrected, like we're marking up the print and it's like, okay, we want to open it up here. We want to, do whatever here, you know, kind of like a digital darkroom, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we send all these scatters, we call them, back to the color guy, do all the adjustments. We get the final proofs and okay, we're good with those. And then we get the magazine and so much stuff would print so bad. It was crazy. And it's cause our paper was so shitty. And we kind of go back and forth with our color guy, like, well, what do we do? And he's like, I really don't know what to do. We're literally printing on the shittiest paper we have, and it's not shitty enough to replicate the paper that the magazine's on. And I don't know. Oh, so God. I don't know. We had some really bad, like one photo annual cover in particular, it just like printed so shitty. And it's like, I don't know. You just like in my role, it just feels so bad because you want to represent the photographer's work in like a really special way. And you don't want to go through the whole story about it. Well, our paper's shitty. And this is
just
like, you just apologize. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We fucked up.
Yeah, no. And it's really sad to see kind of that. And it's really interesting. I mean, you know, it's mind blowing that social media killed print at one point in time, right? Like it feels like for me, and maybe, you know, again, you know, we're dating ourselves, but it just feels like to me, it's like I put value into print in the, like, I want something to hold and feel and just like to look at from time to time. You know, I want to come back to this.
Yep.
I've got a whole collection of magazines at the house that are sitting in a box right now, but I can't get rid of them. I literally can't get rid of them because they have either a photo that means a lot to me that like inspired me in some way, or an article that is like, you know, made me want to go to Austin, Texas or whatever, you know?
Totally.
You know, so like what is just kind of mind blowing is just like, do you think, and again, I don't know, like maybe I don't know if you're going to upset anybody by saying it, but do you think that the demise of Bike Mag was due to, like, it's probably a combination of multiple things, right? It's the change of the landscape of marketing and all this stuff.
For sure.
And how money's being spent, but also like, you know, who you were owned by, you know, like what impact did maybe some of the company, you know, the company that owned, I don't know who owned Bike Mag at the time, but you know, like,
oh, well, American Media Inc. Yeah. The company that owned the National Enquirer. And
yeah. So you would think that they would see the value in quality print media, right?
No, no,
no.
Okay. I mean, like, so for a long, long time, that whole, you know, the whole organization, it was just a big VC backed kind of bankrupt company. Mm-hmm. And it was always kind of getting flipped and acquired. And, you know, when it merged with Transworld, and it was always this kind of effort to make it a desirable product mm-hmm. to sell. So that the
but
idea,
at the same time, they're cutting costs and make printing it on shitty paper and like.
So they're just trying to play the numbers. Can we make this look profitable before anybody realizes mm-hmm. that we've cut out so much of the quality, so much mm-hmm. of what made it special? And it was just one of those things. It was on the market for ages, and I think I went through, I mean, a bunch of different acquisitions where we started as one company name and then another and then another and another. And it was always this kind of like, and now we're going to do this thing, and it's the strength of all our titles that's going to make us desirable. And we're going to, you know, be the home for, it always kind of boils down to the same thing. We're going to be the home for the outdoor enthusiasts, blah, blah, blah. Even at this latest company, it was kind of that same message. We're going to be the home for this one type of person, you know? And, mm-hmm. and it's like, from my perspective, I'm like, I'm a mountain biker. I don't give a shit about any of those people. I just care about mountain biking. And I'm pretty sure a lot of the people that read bike kind of are the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like maybe they do some other stuff, but I mean, we're maybe in a bubble here, like in Bellingham, where people just, they don't do mountain biking. They are mountain bikers. Like mm-hmm. it's their whole identity. It's, mm-hmm. it's who they are. It's what they are, you know? And it's like some suit that's trying to like crunch the, right. they just they'll never understand that. They'll never understand that about whether it's mountain biking or skiing or skateboarding or surfing, you know, they'll just never get that.
So with that perspective, and I mean, you know, there is still print out there, Free Hub right here in town, you know, like why have they continued to exist in such a great, I mean, I know why, but maybe like, what is your sort of perspective about like what they're doing right that Bike Mag at that time, or the owners of Bike Mag at that time, did wrong?
Well, I don't think I don't even know if it's a right or wrong thing. They're independent. Mm-hmm. So it's mountain bikers doing it for the passion.
They're doing it because they care about it, and because the people that are reading it are one of them.
Yeah, I mean, every decision they make is really for the magazine, for Free Hub, for mountain biking. I mean, they're doing it for all the right reasons. They're not mm-hmm. they're not doing it to kind of like hit some arbitrary number, or you know, it's a really like pure endeavor. It's mm-hmm. like it's like really the way it needs to be. And I think like any kind of print media going forward for sure is going to be that model. It's going to be independent. I look at like Free Hub, obviously, is an amazing example here in North America, and then Misspent Summers over in the UK, what they're doing, it's kind of like a, you know, old Dirt Crew kind of mm-hmm. you know, bits and pieces from that kind of contributing. And I love what they're doing. I think it's amazing. I love the design. I love the energy. It's got that kind of feel from dirt. And Shredder Magazine also, you know, Stuart Leal, who's doing that mag. I mean, it's one person and the passion just like oozes out of the pages, you know, it's like, that's where you're going to find that kind of inspiration, the what we're talking about, that kind of like the really precious tactile feel of that time and energy that goes into making something like that. I mean, the days of some big corporation putting out something that any mountain biker is going to give a shit about is like long gone.
I know.
You know?
Yeah. It's really interesting. I don't know. The times right now feel, it's really interesting. We had this bike boom, you know, the industry had this bike boom.
Yep.
And now it feels like it's do or die for a lot of brands in different industries. Like there's a lot of big brands. I've heard a lot of rumors. I won't say anything about anyone, but I've heard a lot of rumors about some big corporate, you know, venture capitalist owned companies who have overdone some things. You could probably draw some hypotheses, but I truly think that what's interesting is going to be, you know, the craft MPB or Craft Magazine and Free Hub and Shredder and some of these are the rider owned brands of media, right? And
100%,
so I think now more than ever, I think if you appreciate those outlets and that creativity and the passion behind those things, the passion behind creating product, is a passion behind the people they sponsor or the riders or whatever, like now more than ever, you got to support those, you know? So
100%. And I mean,
go buy a subscription to all those magazines that we just mentioned, by the way.
Yeah, totally. I mean, seriously though, because I, you know, you kind of, let's say that just those three titles that we're talking about go mm-hmm. away. Like where else are you kind of looking? I mean, there's a few others, you know, that, you know, Cranked in the UK, they're kind of an independent operation. There's a few other kind of like independent operations, but it's a hard game. Like the people that are doing it are not doing it to make money. They're doing it totally out of passion. I'm sure they're just kind of, you know, burning the candle at both ends and just doing it cause they love it. And it's awesome. You know, it's kind of what I wish we had the ability to do with bike, you know, if we weren't kind of under those like corporate restraints. It's just kind of the way, I guess the way that all just developed over the years with how that business grew and then how media changed. And then all of a sudden you're kind of stuck with this big, big business, and, but the business is shrinking. It was just a tough spot to be, for sure.
So Bike Mag goes down. Very sad. The whole industry was very sad when that happened. I mean, if you go back and just look at some of the comments on, you know, Pink Bike and Vital and all these, you know, media outlets, internet media outlets, you know, so many people were very sad. I remember my Instagram feed, you know, was just so many people just, you know, Paris and Lacey Kemp and like all these people were just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. So like, it's terrible. This is so terrible. And, how did Beta come to be? Cause not long after that.
Two sleeps. Seriously. No. So I can give you the whole rundown. So we were actually planning to be in Ely, Nevada for the Bible of Bike test, you know, business as usual, no kind of indication that they were going to cut the staff even further than they had. I guess I should back up maybe about a year though. So we heard rumblings that they were gonna ask the editors to start trimming staff. So my editor came to me and said, you know, I think they're gonna cut everybody that's remote. I was remote at the time, living in Bellingham, and the mag was in California. She says, we should really just like, you should quit, we should put you on contract, and then you're kind of like protected. You can still be involved, you're just not full time, whatever. And my ego was like, ah, fuck. Can't do that. Like, you know, and so I quit. And that was at the end of 2018. So December of 2018, I left. And, you know, sure enough, that came to be. So it went from when I was there, it was a staff of 7. And like 3 or 4 months later, it was down to a staff of 3.
Wow.
So 3 people.
Running the whole magazine.
Whole thing. So yeah, gear editor, Satchel Kronk, who's, you know, amazingly talented, took over for me as photo editor, was also doing the video editor role and doing so much stuff. And then Nicole Formosa was editor. And they kept it going for, you know, the better part of a year. And then, you know, a day before we were supposed to go and start working on that Bible bike test, I was just a, you know, freelancer for bike at the time.
Is this the year everyone built custom bikes and you put tenant parts on yours? Or was that
before? No, that was the year before.
Yeah.
Yeah,
thank you for that, by the way.
Love that bike. No, so this was a year later, and so it was a Friday before we were going to travel. We were going to travel on the Monday. I get a call from Nicole, and she's like, they just shut it all down. They shut everything down. It's done. Bike's done. And I was just like, oh my God, like, I can't believe it. Like, it's done? It's done? It's like, what do we do? Travis is already in Ely with like these 30 bikes for the Bible bike test. And we're all kind of just like, I think we all had like a group call and everybody's just really sad. And then, you know, a few days went by and a few of us were kind of talking independently. Like, we had this like fire and passion. Like, we should do something on our own. Like, we have all the bikes there. We should just do our own thing. We should just go and we'll just do it and we'll just see what happens. Maybe we'll start our own thing. And we had this like spark and inspiration to start something else. And then on Monday we get the call from this new operation, you know, what would end up being outside, and kind of got sold this pretty fairy tale dreamy scenario of, you can start your brand, full autonomy, you know, we'll give you all the support you need, blah blah blah. And I think just at the time, maybe your memory is short or you just kind of block out all the bad things. You just don't think, oh, this is going to be another like big company that doesn't care about mountain biking. Like, you're just like, oh my God, they're saying all the right things. They're saying all the things that we wish we could have done at bike. And we're like, wow, this seems too good to be true. This opportunity is too good to pass up. So collectively, we all kind of agreed, like, we should take this opportunity. They're going to give us, like, pretty, for the mountain bike industry, like, pretty good salaries, going to give us pretty good support. We're going to be a quarterly magazine, blah, blah, blah. And there's just one of us that was like, I don't know. This doesn't seem like all it's cracked up to be. Anyways, we jumped on the opportunity. And pretty quick, we realized, like, oh, shit, we're just back in this big corporate machine. Yeah, we gave it a good go. I mean, we did 5 issues. There was one zombie issue after they fired us all.
I remember that.
Yeah, that they put out. So that one doesn't count. So no. five issues in one no contest. Yeah. But
that is crazy. So four, it was quarterly. So it was one a year, a little over a year.
Yeah, a little over a year.
Yeah. Wow. Which is crazy too. Because I mean, you know, when Beta came out, it felt like Bike Mag, you know, because it was Bike Mag. It was the Bike Mag people, you know. It had the tactile feel. It had the attention to detail. It had the good design. It had the stellar, like, articles and photos and everything. Where did that go wrong? Like, you're owned by maybe, well, we're not going to bash anybody here, but you're owned by a corporate company that, with a name out, like, outside, you would think they would care about bikes or whatever. But, was it just a lack of subscriptions, or, like, what really prevented Bike Mag from taking off?
Beta.
Yeah. What prevented Beta from taking off?
I think you said it there, like, in that slip of the tongue. It's like, it looked like Bike Mag. It felt like Bike Mag, but it wasn't Bike Mag. Mm-hmm. So you start from zero on Instagram, first post, 0 followers, you start from 0 on whatever, Facebook and everything. It's like, when we stopped Bike, I mean, it's not like huge numbers, but by any means, but we had like 500,000 on Instagram, 500,000 on Facebook. Like, it's pretty good reach if you're talking about a print magazine. Mm-hmm. And then you just start that with, like, organic growth on Instagram. And I think when we got shut down, we were maybe like over 20,000, but, like, not much. I mean, any random influencer on the trail has more followers than that. You know, it's like, it's kind of hard to just start again from zero and just assume that everybody is going to follow you over just because you're the same staff or anything. Like, I think what we came to realize is a lot of people didn't even really recognize. They knew they liked Bike. They didn't know what Beta was, and they didn't actually know who we were behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. They were just like, oh, I didn't even realize Bike went away. You wouldn't believe how many times we heard that. You know, they're just like, I wondered why I stopped getting issues in the mail. It's just one of their hobbies that they do. Yeah. And it's like, you know, so I think starting it up was hard in that regard. And then obviously we went to, like, a full membership model pretty quick. And it's like, hey, here's this thing that you've never heard of that you don't know about. And you can't look at it unless you pay for it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I can look at anything all day long until my eyes bleed without paying for it on the internet. Like,
So do you think that Beta would have been more successful if it just focused on quality print and just was, I don't know. Was the numbers were just from a corporate company, the numbers where there was just losing money, or was it just?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Like based on, yeah, I mean, I was on the, you know, I was a photo guy. I don't know any of the numbers, but I can only assume we were losing a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, I honestly don't think there was a way for it to succeed as a print magazine in a big corporate company like that.
Sure.
Like looking back in hindsight, I think if we had that spark and inspiration to do anything, I think the only way to do it would be to do something independent. And then it's obviously like a lot of personal risk and financial risk and all that kind of stuff to start something up like that. And, big life event, you know, the day after Bike got shut down, my wife and I found out we were pregnant.
Yeah.
And then this opportunity comes along with great health benefits and a good salary. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to be super dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it just seemed too good to you kind of like all those like nagging, like, hey, this doesn't sound right. You just kind of ignore all that stuff. You're like, I'm just doing the right thing for the family, you know?
Well, here's an example, and you were around for it, was, you know, the fall of Ride BMX.
Yep.
You know, that went down, and then Ryan what's his name? Why can't
Fudger?
Fudger.
Yeah.
And he took over
mm-hmm.
and started Our BMX.
Yep.
They're not doing print. I don't think they're doing any print. They're not doing any print, but it's nope. more just like a lot of content. They're now like the BMX content of, you know.
Oh, 100%. And you know what's interesting is, so their publisher was also the publisher of Bike at the time when both of those titles got shut down. So we had a lot of insight into what they were doing with their content, and they really adopted kind of a digital first mentality. Because mm-hmm. I think Ride on the print side was probably doing poorly a little bit longer than Bike was doing poorly. And they really switched their focus. Like I know, you know, Ryan and I believe Jeff as well, they were shooting a ton of video, a lot of like quick content, and they were really like engaging that BMX audience kind of on the level where they wanted to engage, you know, not just kind of like holding on to the last grasps of print. So when they got mm-hmm. shut down, I think it was a pretty easy transition for them. I mean, they were such known personalities in the industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had they were at every event.
Yep.
They knew every pro rider. I mean, they could immediately just
totally and
plug in anywhere.
And you know how that BMX scene is. I mean, they're all based in Southern California, and mm-hmm. it's like that's the scene, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think they were able to transition really quickly into a really successful model. And yeah, I mean, there's so many other examples. The editor of Snowboarder, Pat Bridges, started Slush magazine, you know, and that's doing great. That's a quarterly print magazine in the on the snow side of things. And Jamie Owens from Trans World Skate started Closer, you know. So there's all these examples of people from that group where we all kind of got basically mm-hmm. shut down on the same day. You know, there was us that kind of got like lured over back into the corporate yeah. world, and then there was people that are like, you know, fuck all that. You know, I'm a skateboarder, I'm a snowboarder, I'm whatever, and I'm gonna do it for my culture. You yeah. know, and
so do you think that in order for anyone in the bike world to be successful in print, you just gotta sort of the key, it sounds like the key is to just do it skeleton crew, barely squeeze by, and just stay true to like what you're passionate yeah, about, and the people will follow.
Yeah, and I don't know if a lot of people will follow. Like, I don't know what any kind of like numbers look like as far as circulation or anything on any of those titles we talked about. But I know it's like I'm assuming it's a small but engaged audience. You're not going to speak to the millions of people who kind of go to the regular whatever online websites every day to just check the news and stuff. It's a different kind of audience, you know. So it's I do feel like it's kind of a passion project. I think the days of kind of a print magazine to service all of mountain biking, I think that those days are done. I think you're I think you're really serving a small but engaged audience if you're doing something like that.
So, you know? To go kind of now back to what SRAM is doing, and it's something that I dabbled in, but I just don't have the bandwidth. I wish I had. If I had more people, if I had employees, I would try. I would put more investment into. But like brands doing zines or limited kind of print product that comes out quarterly or whatever. I mean, that seems like a really great way to create something tactile that your audience gets to feel more, gets a warm and fuzzy feeling from looking at, right?
I mean, it's like back in the day, the media was kind of that middleman that allowed you to make those connections with the audience for your athletes and stuff. And it's like, you don't need any kind of media to do that anymore. And I think brands like that, like the SRAMs and there's so many others, like I think Santa Cruz does a really great job with their content as well. And I mean, the list goes on and on. There's mm-hmm. there's so many brands. Tenant. Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, I try the best I can. It's difficult. But
yeah. I guess the point I'm trying to make is that nobody needs media anymore. You know, it's like they can... Any of these companies can make really great content, and they have a really captive audience. I mean, you look at the social followings that any of those magazines have, it's bigger than any publication I've ever worked for. You know, it's like mm-hmm. they have a captive audience already. So they can make this content, put it out to their audience. You know, if these one of these other websites that just kind of aggregate content. If they want to put it up, hey, bonus, you know, maybe there's more views there, but it's like the media is kind of an unnecessary step now. Yeah. I mean, they just have a direct access to tell their story the way they want to tell it, you know, with the audience. I think if you can be with a, you know, as a content creator, if you can be working with exciting brands that have a really strong, creative vision, I mean, that's kind of the place to be these days. I don't think it's kind of like scraping two pennies together, trying to get your photo published in a magazine anymore, you know? I don't know. Maybe that sounds cynical, but.
No, I think, you know, I have a lot of like care and passion towards print or any sort of content that you get to hold and feel. Yep. And I really, you know, I kind of battle with this for me personally. It's difficult because, you know, I do all the marketing for the brand and it's very difficult to get any headway, mm-hmm. you know? And so, you know, people like Free Hub, Pink Bike, all these, other media companies or content companies, you know, magazines or websites or whatever are sort of I still have to use that route to draw a new audience and find new people. Totally. You know, this podcast is an example of like trying to step outside the box a little bit and do something different that maybe no other brands are doing. Right. And like to be more engaged with the people who care about what I'm doing or what the company is doing. Right. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would say it's been really interesting and I almost feel burnt out on just media in general. Like I feel like Instagram is killing me. Like you got to post a reel. Why did this reel that was silly and stupid and have no, literally took 30 seconds get 10 to 15,000 views when this one that I spent, you know, a day filming or editing photos and spend a bunch of hours creating something get only several hundred, you know? I feel like it's just like banging my head against the wall. You know?
I know, it's crazy. Yeah. I have that same thought as well. And I think certain companies, you'll kind of see them that'll really like steer the ship as far as what they're doing, like marketing wise, or even media outlets, that it'll really steer the ship with what they're going to put out. And I think the ones with a really like confident, strong, creative vision of who they want to be are going to look at all those numbers with a grain of salt and say, okay, well, we see that does do good, but we also think this is really important. Maybe it's going to get half the amount of views, but maybe it touches people in a more meaningful way. You know, it's like, I don't know if those metrics are always,
I think you're onto something there because one thing that, I do notice about our like Tenet's fans and the Tenet the consumer, you know, that we really are sort of, you know, engaged with, they are more engaged back, you know, like they feel like Tenet is their brand, which is exactly what I want. You know, I want somebody who buys our parts to feel like they're a part of our like family. Right. Yep. And like, I don't just want their money, you know, like obviously the money helps the company grow, you know? And I think there are a lot of companies out there that all they care about is making money, right? They don't care about like mountain biking or developing new product or pushing the industry in one direction or the other. Yep. They just are like, how do we meet our bottom line so that our investors are happy, you know?
For sure.
And and so, you know, I definitely think that, again, circling back to what I said before, you know, now more than ever, if there's a brand out there that like people really care about and they value the kind of content that they're creating or the value, the messaging that they're making, you know, you need to support it. Same with media. If there's a media, you know, if there's a magazine that speaks to you, subscribe to it and
totally,
and, you know, but
I mean, yeah, I would kind of hear pretty like, you know, the inside when people would talk about the value of print and stuff within companies that I've been with, whether it was back in the bike days or more recently, and, you know, people talking about the value of print and how it's just this money losing operation. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know. I just think it's such a short sighted view. I think there's ways to kind of just to readjust or reshape the business. Cause I do think that was like a really important part of like mountain bike culture that is like quickly disappearing, you know, and if people aren't supporting those, yeah, like those independent publications or whatever, it's before you know it, there won't be any. And then, and then you're going to be like, well, back in the day, you know, and it's like,
well, and the thing too is like the depth of that content, that content is actually has a lot more thought put into it than anything that you will find on Instagram or wherever, TikTok or anything like that. You know, there's some of the pieces that come out of those magazines are meaningful and touch you in different ways that social media can't, you know?
Yeah.
And social media is a great tool to get those, you know, to tune people into what is happening over there. And I think that, you know, for me, you know, what I'm going to take away from this conversation is that, you know, that needs to be more of a priority. Like, I want to readjust some of that priority to that, you know, but, one thing I want to go kind of now to present day. You mentioned that, you know, when you worked, at Bike Mag and Beta, and you've mentioned this before previously too, that you know, you're like, oh man, I don't shoot enough photos. I don't get out to shoot enough photos. You know, I haven't really been shooting, you know, now you're doing freelance. Are you working on, what projects are you working on, or what are you feeling excited about photography again?
Oh yeah. I wouldn't say I was ever like not feeling excited about it. But yeah, I think I'm more excited and optimistic about the future, knowing that that is the primary focus, you know, and it's always kind of taken a little bit of a backseat, or I was always kind of like moonlighting on the side if I was shooting a big project or something, because I always had kind of the 9-to-5 with the magazine. And now knowing that photography is the main focus, it's like, it's just super exciting. And to just feel like I'm kind of putting that chapter behind me and just going to kind of refocus on just shooting, you know, it's pretty exciting, you know?
Yeah. So what are you mostly working with, just a handful of like really good clients that fit your like work ethic or your ethic towards content creation, or are you?
I'm not being that particular. I do have just a handful of really good clients, and I wouldn't say it's something that I've had the ability to like hand pick, or I'm not certainly not at like that kind of level or anything,
which I think you should be. I feel like what's really funny is there's it's not funny, but Hector Sora, he is somebody who, you know, we've shot a project with him.
Another great independent media,
But he, you know, you're like one of his favorite photographers. When I told him that you were shooting that photos for that video project that we shot several years ago, he was like blown away. He's like, oh my God, holy shit, that's amazing, you know? So what I was going to get back, or I actually don't even know where I was going with that. But anyways, the point I was trying to make was just that, you know, I think you maybe don't view yourself at that level or whatever. Maybe you don't feel like you're, that could be viewed as somebody like that. But I think you are. Like, you're an incredible photographer. You have a very unique style. The way you edit your photos, the way you curate them specifically for projects, I think it's very, very like you put a lot of emphasis on storytelling and the narrative and the look and feel of the, you tailor the photos directly to the project or the brand very well.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think just kind of like making that transition out of just being the print guy, which is, I think, how a lot of people in the industry probably knew me as like the bike guy or Beta guy, just to being a photographer, you know, somebody who's available to work with. I don't know if that's been like the quickest transition, but I do have some really good relationships that I kind of carried over from the bike days, with people I'm working with now that I really value those relationships and the projects I get to work on. And, I didn't, like I would say last summer since the beta thing shut down, I didn't do a lot, but the stuff I did was like really kind of almost like dream project type, mm-hmm. type stuff. And I was kind of like pinching myself, like, wow, it's like too good to be true. But I wasn't doing like a huge volume of stuff, but it was like just the few little things that just really kind of, I don't know, it felt almost like a milestone mm-hmm. in my career in a way, you know? So, yeah, it's encouraging. I'd kind of rather have that workflow if I can make it work, to be honest, you know, like, yeah. like less is more, you know,
yeah.
you just really kind of focus on really meaningful stuff that kind of really like satisfies that creative itch, yeah. you know?
So last time I was over at your place, you were building a studio. Did you finish your personal private studio?
Yeah. Yeah. And I just kind of shot the first project out of there. Yeah. Like a studio project, not in the mountain bike space at all. But yeah, we spent a few days doing this big studio shoot, and yeah, I've been working on those images for the last couple of weeks, and yeah, it just feels really exciting. I've got this kind of like my own space. It kind of feels like, yeah, like yeah. something you dream of when you're like a really broke yeah. art student.
Do you have do you intend to put a dark room down there?
So yeah, don't tell Anna. we have this kind of like little back room, no windows, plumbing hookups. I mean, it's perfect, and, uh-huh. you know, but
yeah. No, I
you know, maybe have to just sneak that in. Like, what is this? Well, I didn't tell you. I set up a dark room in all my free time.
How could you? So can you just find that equipment like on eBay or wherever? Is it easy to get your hands on? Are there companies that are still making that equipment that you could?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. yeah. But I think if you're just a bit of a like Craigslist sleuth mm-hmm. and willing to drive a little bit, I'm sure like. That stuff's easy to find.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, it's great and it's nostalgic, but it is super time consuming and totally. It's like
kind of toxic chemicals too.
Yeah.
So I don't remember. I kind of remember having to wear like gloves and stuff and you know.
Oh, yeah. You're fine.
No, but no, that's awesome. I actually have been really enjoying film. Lou got me this like little it's like a plastic like disposable style camera where there's no mechanicals or anything. You just take a photo.
Is it a Holga?
No, it's a Kodak. It's Kodak, but shoots. It actually shoots one frame. It splits it in half, so it's two vertical. Yeah, so it only so every time you shoot a photo, it only moves a half a roll.
Yeah, half
frame. A half of a frame.
Yeah.
So you get two photos per one photo, and I took it on my trip to Mexico for Freeride Fiesta.
Yeah.
Took just a bunch of lifestyle and random stuff, and then I also took it to Taiwan. But it's got me really excited about film again.
There's just something about it.
The funny thing is I forgot what I shot on it.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't even remember what I shot on that roll up to this point. And so it's all going to be like a surprise to me, you know?
Yeah, totally.
And I personally think, you know, I'll appreciate the photos that much more once they come back and you're like, oh my God, like you just get to relive these memories that you forgot all about. You
know? Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's something cool. You kind of see a bit of a resurgence like with the younger generation. Like it seems like very popular to see like analog photos mm-hmm. and stuff.
Oliver Parrish.
Yeah.
He's been shooting a lot of film stuff just randomly for fun. And Hannah got a film camera and she's been shooting film stuff on all her trips.
I think that's awesome. You know, it's funny. This is just kind of like something I notice. You'll see a lot of like the old school photographers like kind of be a little salty about seeing young kids like getting shooting into film.
Huh.
Yeah.
Why?
Maybe because they felt like they had to go through the trenches and, you know, make a living shooting film and whatever. But I don't know. I think it's super cool like to see people like really, you know, it's different than the digital images that are just so quick and maybe they're just doing it to get up an Insta post or whatever. But it's like, I would like to think that people getting into film, they're really getting into the act of photography, like the thing that like hooked me like mm-hmm. many years ago, you know? So I think it's really exciting. Like I love it when I see young photographers like, oh my God, film roll from wherever, or even riders, you know, you see a lot of riders, mm-hmm. you know, shooting random disposables.
Yeah.
It's I don't know. It's super cool, I think.
Yeah. Who are, you know, we talked about inspiration kind of back when you were first getting into photography and, you know, all the inspiration you pulled from, you know, working at Bike Mag. Who are you inspired by today? Is there anyone that you're like, man, I'm just really digging this person's photography or, you know, anything like that?
Well, yeah, I think Tal Roberts, he doesn't really shoot much mountain biking a little bit, but, he's more of like a skate photographer, based in Idaho. And, I love his photography. I think it's just so good, like super interesting, really like super cool angles and compositions. And, yeah, just it's such a huge fan. Another photographer, this is a really funny story, actually, Cameron Strand, who started a skate mag called Beta. And so we had decided on the name and somehow word got out and, Brandon Semenuk, who had shot with a few times, he texted me. He's like, hey, have you heard of this magazine called Beta before? Like, just wanted to let you know before you act like make the call on the name. And I was like, oh fuck, yes, I have heard. And yeah, we were like too deep already. And I felt, I felt really bad. Like we were biting the name. And then what do you know? Like 2 issues in, I get a random email from this guy, Cameron, who has that skate mag Beta. And, he had shot photos with Brandon and he wanted to submit them. And he ended up being kind of a regular contributor for those 5 issues that we did. And, had a really like interesting, unique style stuff that I'd never really like, just the way he was like manipulating the light and the frame and stuff, like something that I'd never really seen in mountain biking, as far as all the submissions I get in. And I was really, really hyped on his work and have become a huge fan of what he does. You know, he shoots like mostly non-mountain bike stuff, and I'm a really huge fan of what he does and love his style. So I don't know.
So you mentioned Semenuk and you've shot with him before.
Just a couple times, yeah.
That person seems like I would be really fascinated to be a fly on the wall to some of those projects that he's done. What was it like working with him? Like he's very creative driven, 100%. You can tell just by everything he does. He's just like got a look and a feel and everything. So, you know, when he hires you for a project, is he like, hey, here's what we're doing, and then give you full creativity? Or is he like, hey, here's the direction. We kind of want this look or feel.
No, it's not like micromanaged or anything, but certainly the plan is in place. Like at the time that I've only shot with him twice, and the two projects, I worked with him on, Rupert Walker was kind of the main filmer. And so
who's one of my favorite videographers.
Amazing. And so they kind of have the creative vision. They're like the co-collaborators. They have the creative vision of what it's going to look like. And then I'm just trying to get in there and kind of not be in the way, not blow a shot, like really try and kind of, just kind of observe like that dynamic with them or how Rupert's working and try and make sure that the stills are really going to emulate that vibe that they're putting together with the video project. But, you know, he's just got such an eye for the visual side of it as well. And he's super into photography as well and a really good shooter in his own right. And, so it's just kind of coming from a different place than perhaps some athletes that are just really focused on the trick or the jump or whatever. Like I think he obviously puts all that into it, but it's with this kind of creative output that he's looking to achieve, you know, with everything. And it's super interesting.
You know, I've been on both sides of the spectrum. I've been the person who's shot photos and video, and I've also been the rider in photos and video. And I feel like, you know, I grew up, riding BMX bikes in Michigan. And when I rode with, one of my good friends, Sean Newton, shout out to Sean, I'm sure he's listening to this. He shot a lot of photos of me back in the day, and the dynamic between the two of us, I think, worked really well because we both cared about the end product. We were working together to like create a photo rather than me getting upset because, you know, he's like, hey, can you do that again? I want to, you know, change positions or whatever. I'm like, well, I don't want to, I only want to do it once. You know, it's like, you know, it was more like reviewing the photo together and going, what if we do it from this angle? And actually, I think I can maybe fold it a little bit more. I can fold that table a little more, or maybe go a little higher. I want to try to get above that tree line so I'm in the sky, you know, stuff like that. I feel like Semenik, I'm not trying to compare myself to Semenik, but I feel like that, like working with him would, I'm just, you know, it, would you say that it would be similar, you know, where he's very particular about a shot and the way he looks, the way his legs are, the way the photo is comp, like, you know, the composure of the photo, like.
For sure. On the video side, you know, I don't know if we ever had those like moments where we were really like breaking down a still. Mm-hmm. It was really about nailing those video shots. Mm-hmm. And I think in those situations, I found myself trying to like just be right there eavesdropping, you know, mm-hmm. what are they looking to achieve and how can I, you know, cause you know how it is working around filmers or whatever, you kind of gotta, you're not always getting the angle you really want and you mm-hmm. kind of gotta be creative and move around and find angles that are going to work where you're not in anyone's shot or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just trying to put all the pieces together and make sure you're getting the best angle for the feature and get the best style and all that stuff. And
yeah. No, that is a challenge, and it's something I'm hyper aware of. I think mm-hmm. when I'm like when we've worked together, I always ask you like, hey, all right, I got what I need. Do you want to get another one? Do you want to? Because I can step out and get the hell out of there, and you can really try to get the shot you want. You know, like when we shot with Mike Giese, you know, it was like Giese's one of those people where he really cares about what he looks like on the bike and what the photo and whatever like the shot looks like. And, you know, he's got that very artistic mindset, you know, so he'll do anything over and over and over again if you ask him to, you know,
Totally.
You know, and he won't be upset about it, you know? Yeah. So, you know, is that something, do you find working with specific riders to be, you know, that you're like, oh yeah, I'll always go on a shoot with that rider because they are great to work with, they're understanding. Or, you know, have you had some nightmare incidences?
Not many nightmare incidents, but every now and then, depending on the situation, this more came in the editorial world where you kind of mm-hmm. feel like you're taking people's time. If you kind of get the sense that the person is just like, oh, I said I would do this and I got to do it. And this never really happens with those creative type projects mm-hmm. that we're talking about, but there's have been a few times where you kind of get the sense like, ah, shit, nobody's really into this. And it's really like showing in the photos. And I don't know, those are the times when you're like, ah, this is kind of a job right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, no, on it, like, honestly, I can't really think in those creative type projects, everyone's down for the same goal. Like I just shot a project with Bryn Atkinson. Well, I guess it wasn't just like about a year ago now. And he has a similar way he looks at the trail, like similar to how Brandon looks at his style in the air mm-hmm. on like a jump or like how a slope rider will like look at their style and stuff. But he's looking at that in the way his bike's moving through turns and stuff. And mm-hmm. it was like super, super, super interesting. Like Clay Porter was the videographer on mm-hmm. that shoot. And he's kind of saying the same thing. Like he's never really like worked with anyone that has that same way of analyzing like his body position on the mm-hmm. trail and as he moves through the turns. And we all know he's such a unique rider, the way he like flows down a trail.
He's also an incredible photographer too. Bryn is a great photographer.
I know. Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that about him. I think it's one of those like overlooked skills that he has.
So I guess we're kind of talking about two people that shoot great photos and also have this really unique way they approach like a creative project.
Yeah.
You know, so I love working with people like that, like people that kind of have that same mindset, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just super exciting to feel like it's a collaboration, you know.
Yeah. Anthony, it's been a really fun conversation. Is there anything, where can people find some of your work?
The4color.com online and just at The4color on social. And look for a post once every 3 or 4 weeks.
But it's going to be a really, really high quality post.
I'll put a lot of time and effort into it.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been great. Yeah, I guess don't really know how ever to sign these things off. So, thank you guys. Tune in another 2 weeks. Sorry about the slight delay. I've been doing a lot of traveling, but we're back at it. We'll be back again. If you have any suggestions for any guests that you would like to see, please leave a comment below, and we'll catch you guys next time.